We're reading from Ecclesiastes chapter 2. Starting at verse 1. I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure, enjoy yourself. But behold, this was also vanity. I said of laughter, it is mad, and of pleasure, what use is it? I searched with my heart how to cheer my body with wine, my heart still guiding me with wisdom, and how to lay hold on folly, till I might see what was good for the children of man to do under heaven during the few days of their life. I made great works. I built houses and planted vineyards for myself. I made myself gardens and parks and planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made myself pools from which to water the forest of growing trees. I bought male and female slaves and had slaves who were born in my house. I also had great possessions of herds and flocks, more than any who had been before me in Jerusalem. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the treasure of kings and provinces. I got singers, both men and women, and many concubines, the delight of the children of man. So I became great and surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me, and whenever my eyes desired, I didn't keep from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure, for my heart found pleasure in all my toil, and this was my reward for all my toil. Then I considered all that my hands had done, and the toil that I had expended in doing it, and behold, all was vanity and a striving after wind, and there was nothing to be gained under the sun. So I turned to consider wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the man do who comes after the king? Only what he has already been done. Then I saw that there is more gain in wisdom than in folly, as there is more gain in light than in darkness. The wise person has his eyes in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. And yet I perceive that the same event happens to all of them. Then I said in my heart, what happens to the fool will happen to me also. Why then have I been so very wise? And I said in my heart that this also is vanity. For of the wise, as of the fool, there is no enduring remembrance, seeing that in the days to come all will have been long forgotten. How the wise dies just like the fool. So I hated life, because what is done under the sun was grievous to me. For all is vanity and a striving after wind. I hated all my toil in which I toil under the sun, seeing that I must leave it to the man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be wise or a fool? Yet he will be master for all of which I toiled and used my wisdom under the sun. This also is vanity. So I turned about and gave my heart up to despair over all the toil of my labours under the sun. Because sometimes a person who is toiled with wisdom and knowledge and skill must leave everything to be enjoyed by someone who didn't toil for it. This also is vanity and a great evil. What has a man from all the toil and striving of heart with which he toils beneath the sun? For all his days are full of sorrow, and his work is a vexation. Even in the night, his heart doesn't rest. This also is vanity. There is nothing better for a person than that he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. This also I saw is from the hand of God, for apart from him, who can eat or who can have enjoyment? For to the one who pleases him, God has given wisdom and knowledge and joy, but to the sinner he has given the business of gathering and collecting, only to give to one who pleases God. This also is vanity and a striving after wind.
Thanks so much for reading. It's good to be back as we look at Ecclesiastes chapter 2 this lunchtime. And my aim for this chapter is that we might learn to invest our lives, our energies, our talents and our ambitions, our money and resources in the right things. In other words, in things which are of real lasting significance and substance, rather than in things which are simply here today and gone tomorrow. After all, it'd be terrible, wouldn't it, to get to the end of life, or even to get halfway through life and realise that you've been on the wrong track. It's why I've called this series Making the Most of Life, because in his kindness, God has given us the book of Ecclesiastes to enable us to do just that. It may be that you're, in a sense, starting out on life, your working life is ahead of you. Maybe you're halfway through life. It may be that you're more towards the end. It may be that you're here as a Christian or as a skeptic or as an inquirer. But remember what we saw last week. Ecclesiastes describes the world we all live in, and therefore, whoever we are this lunchtime, it is very much written a book. It is very much a book written for us. Remember how the book starts? Vanity of vanities. All is vanity. Life is like taking a deep breath on a cold winter's morning. You breathe in, you breathe out, and there you see your breath for a moment, but then it's gone. Ecclesiastes describes a world under the wrath of God. It describes what it's like to live outside the Garden of Eden, a world in which everything has been caught up and swept away in the whole tsunami of sin. Everything distorted, everything spoiled, everything perishing. Now, I imagine that if you were here last week, I imagine that some of us kind of recognized the world that Ecclesiastes is describing immediately. But perhaps others were slightly struggling, and you were thinking to yourself, well, hang on a moment, surely the things I spend my time doing, surely they are significant and they are substantial. And then I think is why we need Ecclesiastes chapter 2 to persuade us that they are not. Because Ecclesiastes was written either by King Solomon or someone expressing his thoughts. King Solomon, who was the king in Israel in Old Testament times at the height of its power. Back in chapter 1, verse 13, he effectively says, with all the resources which I had at my disposal in my kingdom, I set out to make a study of everything people invest themselves in and throw themselves into, to see if any of those things are lasting and significant and substantial. Is there anything that isn't just like that breath on a cold winter's morning, here today and gone tomorrow? In other words, you see, Solomon can do what perhaps we long to do but we can't do simply because he had the resources. You know, we can think to ourselves, can't we? You know, if only I had £1 million, life would be wonderful. If only I could live there, life would be completely transformed. If only, if only, if only. And for us, so often, they remain if only. It's the stuff of dreams. And yet, Solomon could do those things. And yet, what is his conclusion? Spare yourself the effort. Well, you'll see where we're going on the outline on the back of the notices. First of all is vanity. And we'll look in turn at pleasure and wisdom and work. First of all, pleasure. Chapter 2, verse 1. I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure. Enjoy yourself. But behold, this also was vanity. In a world that says that materialism and pleasure are the key to a good life, then these verses are timeless. What about laughter, verse 2? It's mad. It's striking how many famous comedians have battled with or battle with depression. The comic actor Robin Williams, who died in 2014, said, you're only given a little spark of madness, and if you lose that, you are nothing. What about pleasure? Here's Freddie Mercury saying, don't stop me now, I'm having a good time. And what's the conclusion, verse 2? What use is it? In verse 3, he gives himself to partying. I searched my heart how to cheer my body with wine. My heart still guided me with wisdom, and how to lay hold on folly till I might see what was good for the children of man to do under heaven during the few days of their life. and yet that too is vanity. It's why Christmas Day, I take it, is one of the most stressful days of the year for so many, because there's so much expectation, isn't there? So much more than one day can possibly deliver, and it can leave a bitter taste. And so he moves on. He gives himself to grand designs and great projects. Verse 4, I made great works. I built houses and planted vineyards for myself. I made myself gardens and parks and planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made myself pools from which to water the forest of growing trees. Houses, palaces, parks, gardens, grand designs and house and gardens have completely nothing on what Solomon was able to do. And then we see verses 7 and 8, his staggering wealth, his prosperity, his possessions. Verse 7, more than any other who had been king in Jerusalem before him. Verse 8, he gathered silver, gold, the treasure of kings and provinces. And then there was sexual pleasure, verse 8, the delight of the children of man. Such an evocative phrase, perhaps of all the things here. It's the promise of sex that captures our hearts and holds out the most. And remember, of course, this was King Solomon. When the Queen of Sheba came to visit and she saw the sheer splendor of his kingdom, it completely took away her breath. Unlike us so often, who so often long for these things but can't have them, Solomon denied himself nothing. Verse 10, and whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. Here, if you like, is the ultimate in retail therapy. That looks nice. I'll try that. I'll have it. And yet, what is his verdict? Verse 11. Then I considered all that my hands had done and the toil I'd expended in doing it, and behold, all was vanity and a striving after wind, and there was nothing to be gained under the sun. That's the point at which Solomon faces up to reality as he looks at all his achievements, and he says it's just like striving after the wind, a pointless exercise. The actor Jim Carrey said in an interview recently, I wish everyone could get rich and famous and do everything they ever dream of so they can see it's not the answer. Pleasure is vanity. Secondly, verses 12 to 17, wisdom is vanity. Verse 12, so I turn to consider wisdom and madness and folly. Wisdom, or as we might say, learning or education, not, in other words, just the kind of wisdom of the academic ivory tower, but the all-pervasive idea that knowledge and education will get me ahead and come up with answers. We can kind of think our way to satisfaction and getting ahead. After all, in the 21st century, we have more information and more knowledge at our fingertips than any previous generation. And if we don't know the answers ourselves, then Google and Alexa will be only too happy to provide. The assumption, of course, being at every point that knowledge will give me the edge. Perhaps at work, you know, if only I get that master's, or that briefing which will help me in my business, or relationship advice, or travel advice. We're surrounded, aren't we, by knowledge which is plying its way. Knowledge rules. And yes, verse 13, there's a gain of sorts in wisdom. It's better to be wise than it's better than being foolish, just as it's better to be in light than darkness, as we can tell in this room. It'd be nice if it was nice and bright, wouldn't it? But it's not bright. So yes, knowledge is of some value. It's interesting, it's stimulating while you do it. And yet at the end of the day, am I any more fulfilled? Deep down, am I any more satisfied? Many people down the years have realised that truth. In terms of human wisdom, there are no two bigger brains perhaps than Albert Einstein and Bertrand Russell. They got together once and they wrote a booklet, and it includes this line. We found that the people who know the most are the most gloomy. Doesn't sound the kind of booklet I particularly want to read, but it's very striking, isn't it? We found that the people who know the most are the most gloomy. And I take it the reason why is because of verse 14. the same event happens to all of them. Death. Death renders wisdom pointless. Verse 15, what happens to the fool will happen to me also. Ultimately, therefore, wisdom too is vanity and will be forgotten. Verse 16, for of the wise as of the fool, there is no enduring remembrance, seeing that in the days to come, all have been long forgotten. How the wise dies, just like the fool. And his conclusion, verse 17, all is vanity and a striving after wind. Well, we say, what about work? Verses 18 to 23, because surely here of all places, this is the place, surely, we're going to find substance and meaning. Something which isn't vanity, which isn't simply breath, here today and gone tomorrow. After all, that's exactly what our culture says, isn't it? Fed up with commuting? Work at home. Life will be wonderful. Fed up with the kids? Go back to work. Life will be wonderful. Fed up with, you're in a job and you don't feel fulfilled, or you feel you're kind of stuck, well, change job and that will sort everything out. Well, Solomon's achievements were brilliant. And yet again, death renders everything he's worked for vanity. Verse 18. I hated all my toil in which I toil under the sun, seeing that I must leave it to the man who will come after me. And who knows whether he'll be wise or a fool? Yet he'll be master of all for which I toiled and used my wisdom under the sun. This also is vanity. Who knows whether the fruit of our toil, the person who replaces us in our role at work, who knows whether that person will be wise or foolish? And Solomon's fears were not misplaced. After his death, his son became king, and his kingdom was divided, its greatness and splendour lost forever. It certainly blows your inheritance tax planning out of the water. Verse 21, because sometimes a person who has toiled with wisdom and knowledge and skill must leave everything to be enjoyed by someone who did not toil for it. This also is vanity and a great evil. Even if your kids do manage to avoid paying inheritance tax on your estate, will they live forever? No. Will they treasure and value the fruit of your toil and labour as you have? Quite possibly not. Might they use it all foolishly? Quite possibly, yes. Everything you do at work will ultimately fail. Verse 22, what has a man from all the toil and striving of heart with which he toils beneath the sun? For all his days are full of sorrow. And it's not just that death renders work and toil vanity. It's also the sheer effort and energy that we plough into it in the meantime. Verse 23, even in the night, his heart does not rest. Sorrow, anxiety, worry, stress. It's estimated that Simon Cowell is worth over £300 million thanks to the success of the X Factor and Britain's Got Talent franchises. And yet there's an extraordinarily revealing line in his biography that simply reads, he can never relax for fear that his power will ebb. Pleasure, wisdom, work, it's all vanity. By which, of course, our Ecclesiastes preacher doesn't mean that there's no pleasure and no reward at all. We'll see that in a moment. We'll see it again next week. You know, the piece of work that's done well, the beautiful garden that can be enjoyed, that's been created, the sporting events that's been attended. Of course, they bring pleasure for a moment. But you step back from the detail and you look at the big picture and there's still vanity. They're here today, they're gone tomorrow. Just like that breath on a cold winter's morning. Now here's the question it seems to me we need to ask. Have we got to the point that Solomon got to? It's not a comfortable place to be, but I take it is a very healthy place to be. Because it's about living with reality. Living with reality in a world of sin and the consequences of sin. Too often we avoid reality. And we play instead, let's pretend. let's pretend if we get that promotion or bring up successful children, then life will feel significant and will leave a lasting legacy behind us. Let's pretend that if we change jobs or emigrate to somewhere sunnier, we won't experience the tedium and the ordinariness of life. Let's pretend that if we move house, we'll be happy and we'll never want to move house again. Let's pretend that if we end one relationship and start a new one, we won't ever again feel trapped. Let's pretend that if we were married, or perhaps if we weren't married, then we'd be content. Let's pretend that if we had more money, we'd be satisfied. Let's pretend that one day we'll have all the time to do all those jobs where we say to ourselves, well, if only I had the time to do that. Let's pretend we can break the cycle of repetition and finally arrive in a world free of weariness. The preacher's conclusions may shock us. But remember, God has given us the book of Ecclesiastes not to spoil our fun, but as a great act of kindness. He wants to spare us the misery of Solomon, of looking back on our life and saying, do you know what, all the things I've invested myself in, they are all vanity. So what are you living for? A promotion? Or that dream job? Your social life, knowledge, qualifications, retirement? They're all vanity. Our preacher in Ecclesiastes is as if he takes a pin to each one of those balloons and just pops them one at a time. Don't spend your life chasing after the wind. So then, how should we live in a world of vanity? That's what I want to spend our last few minutes thinking about. Well, firstly, we are to enjoy God's good gifts. Verse 24, there is nothing better for a person than that he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. This also I saw is from the hand of God. For apart from him, who can eat or who can have enjoyment? So far in Ecclesiastes chapter 2, there's been no mention of God. And yet now, in these three verses, 22 to 25, we get 24 to 26, sorry, we get three references to God in those three verses. I take it the point is that we can't fix the world in which we live, but God can. We live, as we said last week, in a world that's groaning, where sin and the effects of sin are everywhere. The good life will never come. However hard we try, whether it's through pleasure or wisdom or education or work and toil, we cannot create the good life for ourselves. Because the truth is that only God can fix our world. Indeed, he will fix our world. When the Lord Jesus returns at the end of history, when he brings in the new heavens and the new earth. And in the meantime, because God is a generous God, we are to enjoy his gifts. Verse 24, if God has given you food and drink, if he's given you a job you enjoy, things that actually many people in the world don't have, then give thanks to him. But you say, hang on a moment, hasn't the preacher just said these things are vanity? Well, yes, but they're still good things. What spoils them is our hunger to get more out of them than they can deliver. When we expect them to provide meaning and satisfaction, when we expect them to be substantial and lasting, then we are asking them to bear a weight of expectation which they are simply not designed to bear, and they cannot deliver. So enjoy God's good gifts. And secondly, how to live in a world of vanity. Give yourself to what is not in vain. Because the New Testament gives us a wonderfully powerful counterpart to the vanity that pervades Ecclesiastes. Because the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead changes everything. And that's why I've had 1 Corinthians chapter 15 printed there on the piece of paper you were given as you came in. It's a chapter about the resurrection of Jesus from the dead. And as the Apostle Paul writes, his point is that the resurrection of Jesus is the demonstration that all those who belong to Jesus and trust in him will one day be raised to new resurrection life themselves. What do you say? What will that look like? Verse 52, in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye at the last trumpet. For the trumpet will sound, and the dead will be raised imperishable, and we shall be changed. Verse 54, death itself will be swallowed up. So how does the chapter end? Verse 58, therefore, my beloved brothers, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that in the Lord your labour is not in vain. Give yourself to the Lord's work, the work that is not in vain. You see, we read through Ecclesiastes, we hear the constant refrain of vanity, pleasure, laughter, projects, relationships, wisdom, knowledge, work, toil, it's all vanity. And here is the one thing that isn't vanity, the work of the Lord. Gospel ministry, because it lasts beyond death and is of eternal significance. The one thing that's really worth investing ourselves in, that's substantial and significant. You see, just think about it. What are the things which people will be talking about? Those who put their trust in Jesus, they'll be talking about in heaven, in the new creation. Wasn't that holiday we had 20 years ago wonderful? Do you remember the lovely house we lived in? I'm so proud of my achievements at work and the achievements of my kids. No, of course not. The conversation surely will be these kinds of conversations. I'm so grateful for that Christian colleague whose life was so different and so distinctive that it challenged me and made me begin to think about the Christian faith. I'm so grateful for that Christian friend who invited me along to church to hear a talk explaining the significance of Jesus. I'm so grateful for the friends who challenged me to investigate the claims of Jesus seriously. I'm so grateful for those who welcomed me into that church the first time I went. Or perhaps I'm so grateful for those Sunday school leaders who week by week taught me the Bible, or those Bible study group leaders who Tuesday evening by Tuesday evening, often at the end of a busy day, led our Bible study group, or for those Christian parents who prayed for me, who taught me day by day what it is to follow Jesus, or for those who used their money to plant a new church, or for those who used their money to ensure that the Bible was available in my language. Conversations, in other words, about things that are not in vain. 1 Corinthians 15:58. Therefore, my beloved brothers, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that in the Lord your labour is not in vain. Let me pray.